Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode. Well, hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is an advisor story podcast. I'm joined by my friend Nelson. Nelson, thanks for sharing your story with other advisors out there who want to hear from advisors like you that are living the life, waking up on Monday morning saying, I got to go out there and kill it and drag it home if I want to eat. So thanks for spending some time with us today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
How many years have you been having to go out there and kill it and bring it home?
20. Coming up this summer on 20. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you do before this? Is that the whole professional career? Or?
No. So I'm fifth generation in our family to do this. My family started with New York Life in 1888. And we had a rule that if you wanted to come into the family business, you had to go somewhere else first.
Okay.
And so coming out of college, I worked for DeWalt Industrial Power Tools doing sales for them. Had a total blast.
Are you still super loyal? Is everything in your garage yellow and black? Or
if we raise the garage door, you think I still work for them? I've always loved tools.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, it is funny how people join those different. I saw a Ryobi display today or yesterday when I was at the Home Depot, and just thought, you know, they're just team this, team that. So mostly because I'm curious, why should someone buy DeWalt?
You know, I'm so far removed, I almost can begin to sound apathetic and say I don't really care. But, yeah, you know, they had a fascinating story where Black & Decker bought DeWalt. It was a brand from the 60s that was known for a pretty specific saw. And they had Black & Decker Pro and Black & Decker. And consumers like me and you couldn't tell why one on the shelf was, you know, twice as much as the other one.
Oh,
and if it's really the R&D, the quality of the parts,
sure.
You know, metal stuff versus plastic. And so they rebranded Black & Decker Pro into DeWalt to really separate out, like,
really?
They are DIY. And DeWalt is like, are you using these tools day in and day out for your profession?
I did not know that at all. So that Black & Decker owns DeWalt. And that's the...
Yeah, I think there's been further consolidation in the industry since then. But
well, that's like... Like I had a friend who drove a Toyota, and he's like, hey, it has a Lexus motor in it or something like that. Cause I think Toyota, it's like, oh, okay, I guess. Anyway, interesting. All right. Thank you. That was a total sidebar, but maybe four people appreciated it. So for you four, you're welcome. For the rest of you, I apologize. We'll get into the show. So Nelson, tell me about where you live and tell us sort of like, what's the makeup of your business now? And then what do you hope to be moving forward?
Yeah, I live in Dallas, Texas, and, born and raised, lived here all my life. My practice has had kind of family in it up until recent years. It's just been me and my assistant. And this summer, we started expanding. A good friend of mine left where he was in the industry and came over here. His focus is on AUM and investment planning.
Yeah.
And then we've picked up another advisor who is looking to make a career change from sales in another arena and another staff person. So there's five of us now.
That's a big, so how many years were you by yourself though? All those other ones?
No, had one of my four brothers working with us for about 6 or 7 years. My father worked with us till about 2018.
Okay.
So solo from, you know, 18 to 23.
Okay. Gotcha. So we'll get into the AUM friend. What's their first name, your new business partner?
Matt.
Okay. Let's try it a minute. So we'll get into that a little bit. But what I want to focus on for this episode, two groups of people, which is going to be everyone, I think. But you're going to fall into one of two groups, which is one is, hey, I'm doing insurance. I love insurance. But I want to understand better about how insurance can lead me into planning conversations. because I want to get paid for my time and ideas. And I think that for the same reason people want that big payout for insurance, and so they've been giving away planning, people would say, hey, I want to get that AUM, so I'm going to give away some planning. And we want to tell you to not give away any of it. So tell me about first. So that's the first group, is that they're already into insurance. The other group is, hey, I don't really think about insurance very much. I do planning and I like AUM, but insurance is sort of like an afterthought. And so I want to get people excited about making sure insurance is part of those conversations. And I want to ask you specifically how you and Matt work together, in a really healthy way to make sure that people are served well in both those areas. Because am I right that you basically, AUM is great, but you don't wake up thinking about AUM or go to bed thinking about AUM?
I do not.
And in between, you don't really think about AUM. So
I think I know what AUM stands for.
That's your, yeah, no, yeah, okay. All right, gotcha. And, and we joke, but there's people who are like, that's how they feel about insurance.
Sure.
It is, but they don't think about it. They don't worry about it. They just have someone else do it.
It's really one of the beauties about this profession. You can choose what you specialize in.
Yeah. I mean, like the ear, nose, and throat guy doesn't feel like, he's got to know everything about, feet, and that he's a doctor. It's like, whatever, pick your specialty and live in it. Right. So I want to talk about just three different points around insurance and how they lend themselves well towards planning and why people make insurance decisions. This might be review for some people, but it might be brand new for some folks. So talk to me about first, when it comes to people, we want people to do business with you. Like everybody wakes up and says, I want to do business today. Why are you still so bullish after this many years as it relates to insurance and customers becoming customers, going from prospects to clients? Why does insurance still get you excited?
Andy, I think in a lot of instances, insurance has an urgency about it. We believe that life happens. And, when I was 24 starting on this business, I didn't really believe that life happened. I mean, a lot of my peers and I were pretty invincible, but, as we've all gotten older and a lot of our client base has gotten older, you don't have to stray too far from your daily life to see how urgent some of these things can be through those that we're connected to, through prayer lists at the church, whatever yeah. It is. There's a recognition across the board that you're right, life happens and a lot of it's out of my control.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little more about urgency. What kind of things, because we talk about this, is actually in our How to Charge Live training, we have a section and it has the word urgency in it. It's like deciding to, how do you get people to do something, right? If there's a fire, there's urgency, right? And but if there's no fire, people are sort of lackadaisical. So what kind of language do you use to create or help people recognize urgency?
Questions I found are the most powerful, because they really don't want me to tell them. They need to kind of say out loud what their reality is, right. Sometimes in a way that might make them uncomfortable, even just hearing that. So like take disability insurance. I think a great question is just in the discovery side is, if you're too sick or hurt to work, what happens to your income? And then just listen, right? They may not know the answer. They may have enrolled in a group benefit, and many a times they don't know the exact details of that. Disabilitycanhappen.org is a great website. We'll oftentimes just kind of direct people there to say, hey, there's a long list of things. It's not just about insurance. It's about having a plan. But oftentimes, like that can be a disturbing question where someone just realizes, like, man, my income goes and I don't. Yeah. I'm involved in that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask a more nuanced question, because, one of my favorite, I end up talking about this a lot at our trainings, because I have to clarify when I'm not asking a rhetorical question, because I ask so many rhetorical questions. I go, I'm not being a smart aleck, okay? Just give me like one, every 10th question, I'm not being a smart aleck, or it's not being rhetorical. But how do you ask that question in a way about, do you know what happens? Like, how do you ask those questions and this is an emotional intelligence question that I think everybody should be paying attention to. How do you ask questions in such a way that people don't feel like demeaned Does that make sense?
It does. Sure.
And by that, I mean like a non-rhetorical question. You know, rhetorical meaning, you know, what do you think, I'm stupid? Well, technically you're supposed to say no, you know, like that's a rhetorical question. So how do you ask those questions when you know pretty good what their situation is?
So I've gotten great answers to that question, by the way. I mean, we've got clients who say like, 50% of my income's from this retail shopping center, and whether I'm here or not, the income comes in. So I think you've got to kind of, in some sense, narrate that in a way that understands you're not always baiting a hook that's just going to sell an insurance policy. You really are trying to just discover what's going on in their world. Behind the scenes, we talk a lot about what we believe are the five things that would create a qualified prospect, right? For planning, for, you know, for insurance, whatever, right? They've got to have a problem. And so part of the question is designed at like just understanding, like, do they have a problem? Oftentimes the advisor can see it really well. So the second one is, do they agree with you that they have a problem? Are they willing to do something about it? Are they able to do something about it? And do they want to do that something with you? So it's usually not just one silver bullet question that's going to get all five of those delineated out. You're really trying to narrate through and dialogue through with them. So let's say I asked you that question about disability insurance, and we're just going through the fact of you've told me that where you work, you know, they're paying you $1.2 million. Sorry to let that fact out. It's fine.
Yeah. Public information.
And so then it's just almost kind of some reflexive questions about all the ways that income is coming into your home. And so sometimes it's as simple as, you know, when they're like, I don't know what would happen if I was too sick or at work. Would you like our help exploring that? Or, you know, a lot of our clients benefit from our helping them explore that in this planning process. So it's just kind of getting a pulse, because if they're like, no, I don't care about that. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that doesn't really happen anymore in my circles. Usually they want at least to understand with clarity where they are, even if they don't take action to supplement that.
I also think that what I heard you say in between, you didn't use these exact words, but tell me if they land or not. Having a genuine curiosity. So, you know, I could just assume that I know everything about their financial situation, but you having a genuine curiosity and saying, you know, do you know what would happen if your income stopped, or where are you getting your income? Like, you didn't know with that person, well, 50% of my income comes from over here and I don't do anything, and that's actually enough for me to live on. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that changes my line of questioning. So having a genuine curiosity when you ask these questions, I think will help in the conversation. Because if you're just following some script and the answer is always, I don't have coverage, or, you know, I'm like, that's, you're going to get stuck, versus having a genuine curiosity. Tell me about, what are other ways that you talk about insurance that incite action? You use a phrase regarding data that I want us to explore a little bit more.
Part of the benefits of getting into planning, and really to your point, just kind of like gathering the things that are coming from them rather than making assumption, is it helps in some sense take a little bit about me out of the equation, right? And so we do really like a phrase, the data would suggest, right? Andy, the data would suggest you need $10 million of coverage.
What's an alternative to that? What's another way you could say it that's way less effective and it's about you? There's probably several.
Yeah, no, there's several. I mean, and it's usually
what are the bad ones? Pronouns. The bad, like, ones.
Yeah. Andy, I think you need $10 million of coverage.
Okay.
You know, and that feels a little bit like I'm setting it up for, well, that's your belief.
Yeah.
Here's mine. Yeah. Right. Rather than I'm listening to everything you just said, and based on everything you just said, quantitatively, qualitatively, all of that would suggest this. And then it gives you a chance, if you start to refute it, for us to go back to what you said, right? If you say, well, I don't need $10 million of coverage, right? And we've got e-money and we've got tools that can kind of, you know, calculators that can kind of show this, but then it's kind of a, hey, you know, you were really adamant that you not just have a buffer for your family, but that you this. And so, right.
Yeah.
Tell me what's evolving in your thinking.
I like the data it suggests, because it's, you know, if you ever looked at a statement and it says it's going to take this long to pay off this debt, like, that's not someone's emotional connection. That's just math. You know, like, the data would suggest that flying is safer than driving. So, you know, I mean, like, that's data. That's not, you know, that's not anecdotes, right? And so I think that, again, I think it's also helpful because you can talk about the data. So what part of the data do you want us to explore together, since you disagree with that, versus saying, well, no, I'm right. No, you're wrong, right? Like, let's talk about the data, you know? Because then, again, it might be a genuine question of like, well, the data would suggest you need this much. And they'd say, well, how's that possible? Well, let's talk about the data. And then it's about calculations versus what does Nelson think, right?
Sure.
How has insurance helped you expand conversations that lead into planning?
You know, I think it's all interconnected, right? And that's what more and more clients are telling us, whether they're saying it outright, like, I want one place to do everything, or they're just realizing that these concepts are butting up against another one, right? Look at you know, what you guys are talking about at EAN, right? Cash flow, estate, risk management, investment, retirement planning, tax. I mean, all of that, it just touches one another. And so what we were doing for really the majority of my career was we were getting kind of right up to where it touched. Maybe it overlapped a little bit as you got into certain insurance products, and then almost kind of like patting them on the back and sending them on their way.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were, you know, sticking around, having more questions. Well, how does this influence this? And things like that. And maybe even kind of collaborating with other advisors, which, you know, may or may not be frustrating depending on that advisor's philosophies. And so really it was an opportunity for us to just kind of say, hey, look, these are planning conversations that are leading into other planning conversations, or vice versa, right? We're having a planning conversation about something that's leading into an insurance piece. And so we've found that whether you're kind of focusing on the protection side of life, the accumulation, or even kind of that distribution side, there are some insurance questions woven through each of those. And so many times, Andy, what it comes out as is like, well, here's what I'm doing with, say, that particular insurance. What do you think I should do? Right. And so what we like to do at this point is we're moving into planning is to say, you know, I don't know. That's why we have this planning process, so that we can look more holistically at your world and be able to advise you more strategically on that, rather than just telling you maybe a philosophy out of thin air.
I want people who are listening who have been doing a lot of insurance and really like insurance to pay special attention to the answer to this question, which I have not prepared you for, but you'll do great. Is as someone who has loved insurance and really that's been your thing, meaning you wake up and don't think about AUM and go to bed and don't think about AUM, how is planning making your life either more complicated but better, or, you know, like, adding planning to what you're doing? I mean, it's more, right? It's more than you were, because you used to have to stop at a certain point. But is it natural for you to talk about planning now, because you were just sort of getting up to that line and stopping? So my more concise question is, how is planning changing your career as somebody who's always been, you know, solely focused on insurance?
Yeah, great question. I mean, in so many regards, I love it. I love in a sense the challenge that I'm going to kind of reassess where we're going in the second half of my career versus just kind of maintaining status quo. And yet change can bring anxiety at times, right? I mean, are we going to be able to be efficient enough to drive revenue in the way that we need to, you know, keep putting food on the table in the way that we want, right? And so, yes, there's this, you know, this voice in the back of my head every now and then of like, you know, is it worth it? Is planning worth it? You know, and I think what I've heard from a lot of your listeners in the conversations I've had is like, we're all kind of doing planning. We're all having these conversations of, you know, that feel more than just an education on where we are in this, you know, client service arena. And so for me, it's actually been a real joy to kind of come back up to 10,000 feet with a client and say, this is how we work. We don't work that way with everybody. I mean, there's lots of clients that just kind of, hey, I was referred to you to kind of get this thing done. And we're going to help them get that done. But more and more people are excited about that conversation. And it's a little bit like you guys say, it's Sten says, like, you know, my financial plan feels like a collection of the products that I purchased along the way. I mean, people really start nodding their head at that. And so to kind of catch somebody with a pain point of, I want to understand this better, I want to kind of plan better, I want to have a little broader conversation, and they're realizing there's very few people in their kitchen cabinet that they're having that conversation with, right? Their attorney is a difficult one, their CPA, their investment advisor, no one's really kind of bringing all of these together in an encapsulated reality. Yeah. So that's super exciting.
So at this point, it's worth it for you to have that extra conversation and be a part of that extra, you know, the wider scope. Because before, were you sort of dancing around it, but you couldn't really live in it because you weren't making money from it, right?
Well, in full transparency, I didn't have those licenses up until this last summer. I mean, I'm not pursuing AUM, and so was not affiliated with our RIA. Was affiliated with our broker dealer for certain products, but just really wasn't even at a place. So any of the planning that I had done before was trying to work with another advisor. And so I was familiar with the reward that can come with that planning, but had not really made a conscious decision to say, this is something I'm going to go do. Yeah. And I'm putting myself in the driver's seat here.
I think, I try to be as frank and honest with our listeners and our, you know, people we coach and people come to our events is that, you know, planning is more work, but the difference is you're getting paid for it. Where before it was just more work or some work, but you weren't doing a great job at it because you weren't compensated for it. And whether you call it a sinful nature or the human nature or just economics, like when we get paid for something, we do a better job at it, right? And so it's been encouraging to hear how you've sort of made this change. My last question for you is, how is starting to implement planning and have a partner that focuses on AUM, how has it changed your excitement for the next 10 years of you being in the business?
Well, the camaraderie, for one, is something that I have missed the last couple of years. And so just having more excitement up at the office of, you know, collaboration with other advisors. And but, you know, he and I are working to be purposeful on, okay, we want to do 10 meetings a month where he and I are bringing our existing client relationships into a deeper introduction of who we are now as a firm and where we're going. Our hope and expectation is that a bunch of those are just going to be excited to meet the other advisor, kind of be glad about working with us in a transactional product basis and move on. But then a number of them are going to kind of hear that planning story and feel like, gosh, this is what I need. This is where we need to take this. So he's insurance licensed and you know, familiar with that, doesn't want to do it. I'm AUM licensed. Maybe not as familiar as with insurance, but don't want to do that. So we have this strong sense that could complement each other really well.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you. I really wanted this episode to just be a focus on someone who does a ton of insurance and has been open to sort of the shift. And we've had other episodes about this semi-topic, but I think there's been some really practical things that people can take and just implement in their client conversations. And again, we want to be as practical as we can. And so I appreciate you bringing that practical knowledge, appreciate you being a part of our community and coming to our events and such. And so just thanks for being a part of EAN and thanks for sharing your story with other advisors today. I know that it was an encouragement to them and I think a real practical blessing to them as well. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Andy.